America in 2017 or 2018. Their children have since grown up with relatives across the United States. Immigrant advocates welcomed the announcement, but expressed frustration at the slow pace of reunification. President Joe Biden formally raised the nation's cap on refugee admissions to 62,500 this year, after drawing a wave of criticism from supporters for initially keeping the record low cap of 15,000 set by Trump's administration. The president noted the, quote, sad truth that reaching that number of admissions this year will be hard to achieve by September, given the challenges rebuilding a system President Donald Trump had dismantled. Biden reinforced his goal of 125,000 for the fiscal year that starts in October, but cautioned that number will, quote, still be hard to hit. Weather in Washington, D.C. right now is 84 degrees and mostly cloudy. In New York City, it's 67 degrees and also mostly cloudy. For WPFW in Washington and WBAI in New York, I'm Amara Evering.
The previous program was Leonard Lopate at Large, usually heard Monday through Friday here on WBAI New York 99.5 FM and WBAI.org online at 1 p.m. It's 1 minute past 2 p.m. Stay tuned for Quantum Medicine with Dr. Kamau Kakai coming up.
And welcome to this edition of Quantum Medicine. I'm your host, Dr. Kamau Kakai, healinghealthservices.com. And today we're going to talk a little bit more about COVID-19, the experimental vaccine, and the observations of a practitioner who was on with us last week, Dr. Mark Funderlich, and just my concerns, as well as it seems like, you know, this is just steamrolling at this point. And again, people aren't being told or getting proper informed consent that this is indeed an experimental vaccine. Now, I don't know if vaccine is a proper word. I've heard it's called an operating system. But as we talk into this program, it'll become a little clearer about our concerns. As I've noted before, vaccine companies participating in this, you know, wanted indemnity because they understood that it may not be 2 years down the road that the connection is actually made between particular problems that may develop. And unfortunately, let's face it, we've all been worn down by the isolation, the constant, you know, fear of mutations and people dying. So that people want some relief. So the vaccine has been held out as that relief. The experimental vaccine has been held out, even to the point where, you know, in certain quarters, they want to make it mandatory, even though it's actually experimental. Doctors like myself that have been around for a while have wondered why there hasn't been more emphasis placed on the repurposing of drugs that are out there. And when you look at the degree of morbidity and mortality in this country, and you compare that to the quote-unquote developing countries, where you would think that the virus would just ravage through the population, you don't really see that, right? So those are all separate questions. But a couple of the obvious things that have come up are with respect to autoimmune disease that my guest is going to speak about. And then there's a piece of antibody-dependent enhancement, which it's already been noted that in certain populations, particularly in work that was done with African Americans, that there's a heightened antibody response to the vaccines that were given. So the question arises is that if you're actually making antibodies now to the spike protein, and you get exposed to another coronavirus, a mutation down the road, what kind of reaction are you going to have? So we're going to look at that and some particular concerns about pregnancy. But let me bring my guest, Dr. Mark Funderlich, who specializes in functional neurology, which focuses on correcting the integration and function of the brain in both children and adults. So Dr. Funderlich, his work revolves around brain development, restoration of health by looking at blood work, making lifestyle changes, physical rehab, and other passive therapies, particularly working with lasers and hyperbaric oxygen therapy. Greetings, Mark.
Hi, Dr. Kakai. Let's jump right into this.
Let's jump right in, because how did you actually get involved to even make observations about COVID-19, the experimental vaccine?
Right. So I have a platform teaching other doctors how to work with different modalities like laser therapy or hyperbaric oxygen therapy, specifically as it pertains to pregnancy, preconception programs, and developmental neurology and immunology. So recently, a lot of these doctors, and there have been some isolated patients who have been referred in as well, family members, have been started to be referred to me for either post-COVID or post-vaccine with some severe issues, mostly because these different doctors, they want to make sure their family gets the best care, and they know, a lot of these severe side effects need some significant intervention. And so kind of what I've been seeing or experiencing is maternal, so mothers who are post-infection or post-vaccine that have ended up with what's called POTS, or post-orthostatic hypertension. I'm sorry, post-orthostatic tachycardic syndrome. And what this means is that what I've been seeing is that these mothers, after they get the infection or after they get the vaccine, pressure, and they're stuck in bed. Anytime they try to sit up or walk, their blood pressure can't go up. And so they end up fainting, or they become weak and they can't move around.
So let me ask you about how many of these cases have been brought to your attention, and how many are more from COVID and how many are more from the vaccine?
So as total, I mean, we're looking at probably 25 to 30 total cases. And in the past, before the vaccine, we probably saw about half of those. And then more recently, since the vaccine has been ramped up, those numbers have started doubling. But the severity has also started going up as well. So it kind of started with one or two patients who had, as I uncovered, an autoimmune condition or two that they didn't know about. They got COVID, and all of a sudden they would have severe symptoms, not to the point where they wouldn't be able to walk or have severe fatigue and not be able to get out of bed. They would still be able to get into the office, and we would have to work through some things. But, really, I find that the patients who end up being vaccine injured, or so it appears, are the ones who end up with the severe side effects where, they may be out of state and they have no ability or capability to make it into the office. They're totally stuck in bed, and we have to do everything via telemedicine, at least in the start, in order to get their care underway.
So how does this even happen? Right. From what you understand about the experimental vaccines, how does this happen? What's the mechanism?
So there's two things that we have to understand about the infection and the vaccines. COVID, autoimmune diseases and things that are becoming more and more prevalent are going to end up using the same exact mechanisms that the patients who are post-vaccine injured are using. So there's two things that are novel with the coronavirus specifically, and that's going to be the spike protein, the nuclear envelope proteins. And so these are things that are very specific and unique to coronaviruses. That spike protein is really what they use to get inside of human cells, and the nuclear envelope is what they house their viral DNA inside. And those are the different things that our body, when it creates antibodies, are looking. You know, our body, if we think of the antibodies, they're looking for specific, like a wanted poster. And the more specific that wanted poster is, the better job they do of getting rid of that organism, bacteria, virus, whatever it may be. So our body uses the spike protein and the nuclear proteins of the coronavirus in order to identify it. Now, whenever our immune system is unhealthy and we have what's called a loss of tolerance, what happens is that wanted poster is very general. So the COVID infection, the virus gets inside of your body. And instead of making a very specific wanted poster for the coronavirus, you get a very general wanted poster. And our own immune system ends up attacking our own human tissue. And our genetic susceptibilities, in combination with the COVID infection, end up driving which specific autoimmunity people end up with. Now, how this relates to the vaccine is as such. The vaccine, the whole point of the vaccine, whether it is, you know, this novel mRNA-based vaccine or the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, and we'll go over the difference between the two vaccines in, I assume, next, but no matter which type you get, the whole point of the vaccine is to allow our own body, it's basically to allow our body to create those protein sequences, the spike protein sequence that we create the wanted poster for. So whether you get infected or you get the vaccine, you are going to be having those peptides or those amino acid sequences that your body is creating the wanted poster for either way. So the patients who are going to be at risk for getting autoimmune conditions from the infection are going to also be at risk from getting those autoimmunities when they get the vaccine as well. So there's no, on its face, safety as far as the things that could happen from getting the vaccine versus getting the infection. Does that make sense?
It makes sense, and it's the kind of thing that, you know, we keep hearing, oh, the vaccine is safe, we're not having problems. But I think the whole point in it being an experimental vaccine is that clinical trials take time. And usually the rollout process for a vaccine was like 5 years. And we're talking about going into something where it's not like these things weren't known, but there's such a state of fear and desperation created, and people weren't really, it wasn't really emphasized some of the other things that people could do, both relative to nutrients and some of the other drug therapies. While there may not be the best clinical research, we at least know enough about side effects to understand that they're, you know, worth trying without creating the possibility for this long-term morbidity. So, so why don't you, well, you know what? Let's take our break right now. And then when we come back, we want to talk about a comparison of the other vaccines. And I'm curious what response, you know, you're hearing or you're getting from other colleagues. So this is Quantum Medicine. I'm your host, Dr. Kamal Kokai, with a special guest, Dr. Mark Funderlich talking about COVID-19 vaccine reactions. Stay tuned.
Greetings, listeners. This is Dr. Kamau Kokai. WBAI needs to feel your love. Since the 1960s, you've heard members of your community share their passion and enrich your lives and the lives of those around you. Health, science, the arts, news, it's all here at WBAI. So nurture the station that nurtures you. Become a WBAI buddy. For as little as $10 a month, you can make a difference and continue to feel the energy and passion of all the producers that are trying to give you the best. Go to give2wbai.org. That's give2wbai.org. Blessings.
Greetings and welcome back to Quantum Medicine. I'm your host, Dr. Kamau Kokai. I'm joined here with my guest, Mark Funderlich. I'm already getting calls and emails. Well, I have this autoimmune disease. Should I be doing this? And there's that article that appeared in Clinical Immunology, right? That was last May, and it talked about potential antigenic cross reactivity between SARS-CoV-2 and human tissue, with a possible link to an increase in autoimmune diseases. So that even makes some suggestions there, but what have you seen from your research?
Right. So like we talked about in the first half, we're going to break this up into two sections. So the research shows the cross-reactivity of human tissue with the spike protein and cross-reactivity of human tissue with the nuclear protein. So let's start with the spike protein, because that's the one that gets all of the press. Now, we're talking about when that wanted sign gets a little bit gray and our body starts to attack our human tissue. So instead of the antibody sticking to the spike protein, it will start to stick to our organs or parts of our cells. And three of the big ones are the different transglutaminase antibodies becoming cross-reactive. And what that means is that the patient will start to have symptomatology of all the different types of celiac disease. So there's three different types of expression of celiac disease. One that beats up your intestines, one that beats up your skin, and one that beats up your brain. So all three of those types become in play whenever we start to look at this cross-reactivity. As it pertains to pregnant women, one of the number one reasons, maybe the number one reason for miscarriages is phospholipid syndromes. And so you can get cross-reactivity where these phospholipid antibodies will end up becoming present and can affect your blood vessels. Actually, when you look at the research, people who are dying from COVID infections in the hospital, we're seeing a major side effect of hypercoagulability, which means their blood ends up having major issues. And so what some different doctors are hypothesizing now is that the phospholipid antibody cross-reactivity is really creating a lot of the death from the infection. It's not actually the infection itself. It's this autoimmune cross-reactivity. And the next section is going to be tons of different nervous tissue or brain-based autoimmunity. So things like GAD65, which ends up giving you a whole slew of different brain problems. Things like synapsin, so your synapses of your nerves, beta amyloid plaquing becomes more present. I mean, a whole bunch of different types. And then just to wrap it up, we have ANAs, we have histone antibodies, so things like lupus, actin, myosin, occludin and zonulin, so things like leaky gut, things that pull our intestines apart. S100B, which ramps up our blood-brain barrier and opens it up, as well as insulin antibodies. So diabetics can become actually auto-reactive to the insulin they're putting in their body to keep themselves alive. So there's a whole slew of different autoimmune conditions that can become present. Statistically speaking, the most common are going to be the mitochondrial. So people are going to get extreme fatigue. And I mean, how many people have said they've gotten severe fatigue after they've had the vaccine so far? The GAD65, which is going to affect our pancreas and our brain, going to give us things like severe and extreme anxiety, as well as things like NFP, which has to do with our nucleus of our cells individually. So those are the big ones for the spike protein. And then
just to back up on that. So this information was actually known. I mean, that particular article that, you know, I know you in part that's a reference, that's August of 2020. I mean, that was before the vaccines were even unleashed. And I don't recall this level of discussion where people are. I mean, my concern is, do doctors know this information in terms of counseling their patients? Are they facing the position of having to do their own research, and they may or may not uncover this information? Because when I'm speaking to my clients, their PCPs aren't telling them this. You know, and this is like detailed information that needs to be out there.
I mean, I don't think that any doctors are really being educated on things like this. This specific mechanisms that we have been talking about, the role of molecular mimicry and cross-reactivity to infections and vaccines has been out there for many, many years. I mean, doctors like Dr. Schoenfeld have published research back in 2018 about how we've known about these mechanisms since the 60s or 70s, and no one's really done anything about it. You know, I think doctors are a little bit afraid to go against the grain. You know, it's such a time where people are so stressed out. You know, if you go against the grain around COVID, you know, you might lose some patients, or patients might think that you're endangering them. So, you know, people want to be very in line and not say anything negative because, you know, they're a little bit afraid to go against the grain right now because people are having such emotional responses to these topics.
Right. I think it all comes under informed consent, because I certainly don't tell anybody, you know, don't do this. I might say, well, this is what I recommend for myself and my family. Mm-hmm. But then I at least try to present some other information. And, you know, I'm sorry to say that that's not happening. And the other piece is, we don't know what we don't know. We're doing something that's really, it's not totally new, because when it has been used before, mRNA viruses, respiratory syncytial virus, that created problems. And there's another animal study, and that also created problems. When I say problems, I'm talking about people and animals dying. So, and, you know, we haven't been able to make vaccines to coronaviruses because of the nature of coronaviruses and how they change. And here we are, like, this is like our main therapy. And my message to doctors is that we can do better than this as health practitioners. You know, as a medical system, we can do better than this. So that's my concern. But before we run out of time, I wanted you to say something about the other type of vaccine that's out here, the Johnson & Johnson one.
Right. So when we have the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines, those being quote-unquote mRNA vaccines, what that means is that we take basically a signaling molecule and we put a nanolipid or like a fat bilayer around it, and that allows it to enter our cell. And when it enters our cell, the mRNA uses our protein replication structures to build spike proteins. And as it builds those spike proteins, our immune system gets interested in it and starts to create antibodies to destroy that spike protein. Right. So whenever we talk about the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, basically the same mechanism is underway. However, instead of using a nanolipid bilayer, we are using an adenovirus. So we're using an already existing virus to inject the mRNA material into our human cells to create these spike proteins. So when we talk about classic vaccines versus mRNA-based vaccines, you know, the Johnson & Johnson vaccine is using a little bit, even though it's a virus, you know, a little bit more of a known mechanism that has been used for other vaccines in the past, but is still using this mRNA-produced spike protein sequence, as opposed to taking chunks of dead bacteria or virus and injecting that into our body with an adjuvant in order to stimulate our immune system to uptake those dead viral cells. You know, this is creating proteins by using our own mechanisms in order to get those things expressed, to get the immune system interested. So there's differences between the two, but fundamentally they're both the same.
I was going to say, fundamentally, it's still going to come down to the same mechanisms in play, you know, potential effects.
Right.
And I'm just wondering if you had any other thoughts as we wind down as to the direction this is going to go or how you see it affecting your work.
So, you know, I think two thoughts quickly. The first thought is, if people don't feel well, you know, after a COVID infection or after the vaccine, you know, they should find somebody who is willing to run an autoimmune panel and look at their immune system and see, do they have high levels of CRP-based inflammation? Do they have antibodies being produced? Because then they need to take action to get their life back on track. And with the patients that I've been seeing, you know, as we already know, autoimmune diseases are massively on the rise. 1 in 11 women already have an autoimmune disease. Now we're going to take either the coronavirus infection or mass use of the vaccine, and we're going to add another stressor onto women's immune systems that could result in, you know, unknown changes that could make current conditions worse or could give them new expressions of different diseases they may not have gotten as early anyway. So, as far as what we need to do, you know, it's just going to build a bigger population of people who need help.
So at some point, we will have you back to talk about what people can do prophylactically and then when they do have it. But we're about out of time from now. Can you quickly give out one of your best contact information?
Sure. So, you know, we have created an autoimmune panel. My wife actually created it. So, you know, if we need to share that with people so they know what to look for, then, you know, they can reach out to you or to me and we can give them that information.
Sure.
They can reach out at my email, which is my first name, M-A-R-C, my middle initial, E, and then my last name, FUNDERLICH, @gmail.com. Or they can look up Dr. Mark TV and they can find me that way as well.
And I'll be sure to put this on the website as I post the programs the next day. Folks, we're out of time. Again, thanks to Dr. Mark Funderlich for just a significant contribution today. And I always ask you in the listening audience to remember that consciousness wants to express itself through you as you, and that you are the one you've been waiting for. Blessings, and we'll be back with you next week, healinghealthservices.com. Looking forward. Take care.
Nurse family therapist Richardina Theodore, we delve into the explosive issues in mental health. Our mission is to help you know yourself, release your anxieties and your depression, and free your mind. Only on WBAI, the voice of the voiceless, can we voiceless ones be heard. Support the show and WBAI by